Welcome to Your Brand Amplified, the podcast where we interview marketers, publicists, and brands to learn their stories, what makes them tick, and tips and tricks that make a difference. I'm definitely feeling pulled in a certain direction because Lori Smith, who's my guest right now, is one in a number of people I've been having conversations with recently about finding your voice, really being authentic. But Lori, with Voice Matters, you take it a step further and not just talking about authentic speaking, but going to soulful speaking. So thank you for being here. But before we get into that, I want to hear more about your background because you were in theater and you've done so many creative pursuits. How did that lead you to where you are today?
Well, it's been a long road, so I'll share highlights of the journey. I started acting formally when I was about 7 years old, when my mom found me in the backyard talking to myself. I had been playing with some friends, and we were making up stories, and kids being kids, they got bored with it and wanted to go to the pool, and that's when my mom, I was going to stay there and finish the story, and my mom found me there.
Wow.
And theater was really my first spiritual zone. It was the first place that I ever felt in the moment, utterly present. And a lot of times I tell my clients that I've spent my entire life weeding out the kind of mean girls version of theater and there's movies like The Understudy where I think the understudy kills the primary. That kind of competitive backstabbing that does exist, just like with anything in life, there can be that side of theater and film. Mm-hmm. And there is also the light side where there's a group of people that are capable of being present and connected to you through anything in your life in a way that most of the world is not. And that's what I've chosen. That's the friends that I've made along the way. And that's what I'm pulling out and bringing to my speaking clients when I bring theater. So about 20 years after my mom found me in the backyard talking to myself and took me to my first acting class, I had a bachelor's degree in theater and some other minors. And I was doing theater at night and working as an executive assistant during the day here in the Silicon Valley. Way, way, way too many hours overall because I had a scarcity thing. So I was already putting in more than 50 hours a week at the day job and then, you know, doing theater at night and on the weekends. And I kept having this voice that was trying to nudge me to go live a more aligned life. And I was ignoring it. And there was a day where as an executive assistant, the day after a show closed, somebody asked me to fax something, which was my job, one part of my job. And a voice inside of me said, "Don't you know I'm meant for greater things?" And I was the one who wasn't listening to the voice saying, "It's time to move on. You've learned." It was fabulous in my 20s for character studies. Like, who are all these people and how can I play them? And around that time, in my favorite acting class ever, including graduate school, pre-graduate school, Richard Side at the Sideways Acting Studio in San Francisco and LA, but I was in San Francisco, we were doing an exercise called a short stack, where instead of getting up and doing an exercise with a partner or like three other partners, it was me all by myself. And there were people jumping up there, but it was like it was Lori's exercise. And in between these little vignettes that were part of the exercise, I kept doing that thing of like pulling myself together, jaw tension, emotional mask, energetic armor in front of the heart. And he stopped the exercise, as he had to do a few times with me over the years that I worked with him. And he said, "Whatever that is that you're doing in between the scenes, stop doing it." And I responded with, "I'm not that comfortable having everyone's eyes on me." And I think he even took off his glasses and said, "Well, you've picked a strange set of careers for yourself then. You're an actor, a speaker, a leader. Part of you wants this. Part of you knows you're meant to be here." And it was like my soul heard him.
Yeah.
And he held an incredibly safe space. And I deeply trusted him by that point. It had been a couple of years. And I went back into the exercise and was actively like, okay, feeling the impulses in my body to hide, feeling the jaw tension trying to come in and actively releasing the jaw tension and feeling the armoring wanting to happen in front of the heart and actively releasing it and hearing the voice in my head saying, you have to stop crying from the last scene because this scene is clearly a comedy. Nope. Just somehow say yes to whatever's here and go from there. And I could feel layers of like lifelong layers of tension melting away. And by the time the exercise was over and I looked out at all of my classmates, I could see and feel what kind of day every single one of them was having. And that was my first moment of oneness that lasted beyond the acting. I'd had deep presence while in character. This time it lasted beyond that. And very soon after that, I went to graduate school, had some powerful experiences in graduate school as well, and came out and was working as a personal assistant and looking for teaching jobs. And started doing some teaching jobs in theater. Mm-hmm. And a student about my age at a community college came up to me and said, you're different. I think you're a coach.
Huh.
Because you don't have that professor style of being on the podium and relaying information.
Interesting.
You have more of a coaching style where you're asking questions and you're blurting intuitions and drawing people's performances out of them. And when you trust yourself, you look like you're reading people's minds and you're drawing the best performances out of them. And then she said, but when you don't trust your style, when you don't trust yourself, it really isn't working for you.
Oh my God.
So stop trying to do it like other people. Wow. And her face looked like it was in a fun mirror and time looked like it was slowing down beside her. So I went and signed up for my first coaching class a week later. And the rest, as they say, is pretty much history. Within 15 minutes of being in that room, I turned to someone else and said, I feel like this is the final piece of what I'm here to create. And the person said, what is that? And I said, I can't answer you with my mind yet. And that became bringing theater, coaching, leadership, even a little yoga and mindfulness all into this calling, which is my business of helping people to speak soulfully.
Mm. Wow. I'm feeling this so deeply because I am a professor as well. I see you still teach. And I realized, because I love talking about branding, and because I'm my background's marketing, PR, branding, but I teach it is really from knowing who you are on the inside and make sure that you are using the best parts of yourself. So I recently realized there's something else that I'm supposed to be teaching, and it's not just a marketing class. And that's what I've been looking at and investigating and studying. So I love the fact that you were able, and maybe, you know, you had these nudges, but it took somebody else from the outside telling you, you can do this and you don't need to do it how anybody else does it because you have this unique ability to create and to help people find their voice and use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there were lots of, you know, for the sake of time, otherwise we'd be making like a 2-hour movie out of my life. There were a lot of little nudges. So as you're feeling, you know, the universe may be whispering to you through people.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. A friend of mine from grad school, after I went to coaching school and I was still teaching, I said, I'm thinking about doing something with, I had gotten like a voice certification after grad school.
Wow.
And I was going for a hike with her, you know, because I studied life coaching. So I was like, am I just going to be a life coach?
Yeah.
And then had a conversation with my favorite boss ever, who is this entrepreneur's entrepreneur. And he kind of said, what's your niche? What's going to get you in the door? And his first suggestion was like, it's not that. He said, you were always really fit. What about something with that? Like health is really popular in corporations.
Yeah.
And I said, no, but it might have something to do with public speaking. And he went, oh, yeah, I had actually helped him when he became CEO after the former. Well, I wasn't even doing this yet, but he was in the room trying to record a video and he was struggling a little bit. And he looked at me when no one else was looking and he said, help me. And I just blurted some things to help him. So when I said, maybe it's something with public speaking. Oh, and then there I was hiking with a friend in Tilden Park in Berkeley. And we were walking side by side. And I said, I'm thinking about weaving together the coaching with voice for public speaking. And she did a double take for, if you're using the video, you know, we're walking like this. And she went, yes.
That is the face you want to see.
So there were a lot of lots, even more, like I was resisting the voice coach thing and it kept coming to me, you know. So there are whispers that will be really clear in hindsight of like, what is it? What is the thing that you're meant to teach that isn't just a marketing class?
Right.
Be on the lookout for all of the signs. Because sometimes I feel like they start out really gentle so that in the middle of us going, what am I supposed to do? Is it over here? It's like something is going, hey, look this direction. So.
Yeah, that's, and I think we have these repeating patterns, right? Where we think we're supposed to be going in this direction and something is telling us, trying to nudge us this other way, but we just don't have the belief or the trust in ourselves. And I bet that's a lot of what you help pull out of people to get them comfortable in the process and with actually speaking and using their voices.
Yes, yes. There are a lot of my clients may even start out, it's like one voice inside of them is saying, you need to speak for the sake of this calling.
Well,
whatever speak means, it can mean TikTok videos and it can mean getting on a stage. And another voice is saying, who am I to speak?
Yeah.
No one wants to hear from someone like me,
right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And we, if we're in a group, help them let go of the myth that no one wants to hear from someone like them. There are also, you know, we grew up with one kind of a leader. So that's kind of ingrained in us. That's in part creating, you know, who am I to speak? I don't look like the guy in a suit that I grew up with. And the world doesn't need what it had in the past. So it's hard for our left-brained minds to really grasp. The world needs to hear from the people we haven't been hearing from. Otherwise, we would have solved all of the problems on the planet if the old voices were enough. So I help people debunk some myths about speaking, like it polish is not what people want anymore. It's more about authenticity and soulfulness. And our presence is far more important than our content. A lot of people believe that there's only one kind of charisma. When in reality, there's 8 billion different people. So there's 8 billion different possible types of charisma. Every single one of us can be charismatic, just like we were when we were born.
Yeah. So many ways I want to go with this conversation. But I'd like to talk about soulful speaking, because you said you do help people with authentic speaking. And I always talk about authenticity. But soulful speaking, what does that look like?
Yeah. Authenticity is a doorway to soulful speaking, and it's absolutely a part of it. You can't be soulful if you're not being authentic. And authentic speaking, well, let's just say we were born fully charismatic beings, soulful beings, which means our body, our breath, and our energy resonating at this full capacity. And then the world taught us to be like this.
Uh-huh.
And soulful speaking is recapturing this.
Uh-huh.
And you can't get there without authenticity. And to me, it's more. It's people's hairs standing up on end when we're the one speaking. People feeling an energy coming from us that they can't explain. I can be authentic when I'm speaking and not have an intention for my speaking. I can be talking to you in a cafe and I can be authentic.
True.
And if we're a leader speaker, a visionary, a sensitive visionary, an ambitious empath, a loving rebel who wants to help change the world, we need to step up and step into our soulful speaking where it's connected to an intention that is connected to that calling, something that is a sense of purpose, some calling that is bigger than us or bigger than our ego. That starts, those are all ingredients that take it from authentic to now it's authentic and soulful. And it's like hearing a singer. Madonna is a singer. She's not a soulful singer.
Right.
And part of that is because, you know, in the 1980s, when most of her music came out, they were doctoring it with technology that like flattened it out and made it sound thin. If you imagine Aretha Franklin singing, that's soulful. It hits your body. It hits the hairs on your arms in a different way.
So when you had this epiphany through your favorite boss saying, yes, and then you realize you're already doing this work without even knowing it. And then your friend did the double take when you're on the hike. What did it look like from there? Was it scary to fully leap into the fullness of your being and your calling?
Yes. And I will say I'm one of those people who needs, sadly, kind of needs to have some ahas again and again and again, though I feel like I've crossed over and to a little place where they're faster and different now. And because running a business, it can be scary. It's also like a spiritual path all of its own. I would go toward what is now being a soulful speaking coach. And then I would get a little scared and I would go, but I need more clients and I can coach anybody. And I kept like widening what I'm doing. And over the course of 16 years, it was like, I've heard that, and it was like, okay, I'm doing speaking coaching, but I'm also doing life coaching.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing speaking coaching, and I'm also doing your voice anywhere in your life. You know, that was, and over the course of time, it was like, but what I really love doing the most that brings everything I do together is what I'm now calling soulful speaking. And yes, just had clients telling me it has a way of rippling out through your whole entire life. And I'm not marketing, which, you know, if you're teaching marketing, I know you're going to be like, yeah, Lori, I really could have helped you 14 years ago. You can't market to everybody all the time. You can market the thing that you love to do the most with the people you love to do it the most and let it ripple. Yeah. Rather than I'm going to try to help everybody with their voice everywhere in their life.
It's very difficult when you are a creative person and an entity or soul, right, who has so many ideas of how you can help people and things that you want to put out into the world that you know will make a difference. But harnessing that energy is truly what helps us get to the next place. And it's hard for all of us. And I was very appreciative the other day when I was talking to somebody about my latest pivot. And she used to, you know, I said, yeah, I know, I do all these things, but I promise they're all really connected now. Like I see the through lines and how they all work together. And she said, you're always innovating. And it could have been a backhanded compliment, but it really was meant sincerely. And I said, oh, thank you for saying that. It gave me permission to live in that space of, yes, I'm going to pivot. I have, because I'm going closer, right, to my calling. But then I'm going to go, same, I might need a few more clients, or, oh, I need to make a little more money right now. So maybe I need to go over to this area. But every time we do that, something's going to try to get us back.
Yeah.
So I love that you finally are here and you have a book, Your Voice Matters, as well. And you work with a variety of people. And I want to know more about how do your clients find you? How do you know that they're the right people? Because you use some words, right? Sensitive visionaries, ambitious empaths, loving rebels. So it's clear to me that there's a certain kind of person that you want to work with and that you really want to help.
Yeah. Most of them still find me by someone else telling them about me. I have had some find me by hearing me on a podcast.
Ooh.
I have had many over the years see me speak somewhere, either on Zoom or in person. A few have found me straight off of some social media channel. I think LinkedIn is actually the one where people leapt from one post straight in. And now that I know who they are more fully, because that has been part of the journey, people would ask me for the demographics. And I hated that for so many years. I hated it. And then somewhere along the way, somebody mentioned the term psychographics.
Yeah.
That sometimes it's not about the demographics. It's about who are they? Who are they in the world? What do they want? What do they long for? What are their pains and their struggles? And I worked with a branding person in 2020 and started to get clear. And I was using the word empath for a while there. And a lot of my clients don't respond to the word leader. So in the early years, I was wanted to work with leaders and emerging leaders and reluctant leaders. And about a year ago, I decided to start my own networking group.
Mm-hmm.
And it was time for me to announce it. And I was like, I don't even know why I'm doing this networking group. I'm really not the kind of person that draws thousands of people like a networking group should. But I'm called to do this thing. Why am I called? It's time for me to write the post. And I wrote the phrase, sensitive visionaries, ambitious empaths, and loving rebels. And I sent it out. And a copywriter that I know who was on my list copied and pasted it back and put, this is hot, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point, fire, fire, fire emoji. And I emailed her back and went, oh, huh, that was just kind of something that came through me for this networking group. But do you think those are my people? Do you think I should put that everywhere? And she used expletives and yes in her response back. And someone used the phrase ambitious empath with me like 5 years ago.
Huh.
And I went, I've got all these clients who are going, no, I'm not a leader. No, I'm not a visionary.
Yeah.
I'm not an empath. And I went, some are rebels, but what kind of a rebel? And I went, well, if I put two things together for each one, I think people will understand there's a spectrum of like, it's almost like we're the land of the misfit toys to the rest of the world. From that spectrum, instead of trying to use just visionary or just leader or just empath, because if they're not an ambitious empath, I'm probably not the coach for them. There's another coach who's going to help them deal with, you know, having narcissistic relationships or something like that.
Very powerful words. So people come to you through other people, through a little bit of social media, through hearing you speak, which is fantastic. I love it when people say that because I completely believe I've listened to podcasts and started working with people because I really loved the guest or the host. And I'm a host and I also am a customer. And yeah. I love that you mentioned demographics and psychographics because we always want to look at a mix of the two. Maybe you start with, you know, when you're creating that persona, you know what's going to motivate them. And maybe you put a little bit of a demographic on top of them, but that doesn't mean that's the only person you're going to reach.
Yeah.
It's just who you might language to first.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
what does it look like when you work with clients today? You talked a little bit, I heard you talk about groups a little bit. You work with groups, you work one-on-one. I don't know if you started working with people all over, but I imagine now, of course, we all are online. So the world changed.
Yeah. My running joke during the pandemic and even beyond was I've been working with people on Zoom since before it was popular. Because even when I didn't know who they were, I wanted to work with the people that I want. Well, I couldn't name them as clearly as I can now. I wanted to work with the people that I wanted to work with. So I've been working primarily on Zoom since probably 2014 or something like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I was very lucky when the pandemic hit compared to some other people at first. My favorite way to work with people is in small groups. I do some one-on-one, and that tends to be with speakers who are going to be speaking all the time.
Mm.
So they have their own arenas to be practicing in, and they're willing to go try new things. You know, work with me, get on stage 3 hours later, or record your podcast right after working with me, and you're willing to do your quote unquote homework right then and there. Those are vibrant and alive, and I love working with people that are, they tend to be busier, and they're busier because they're doing the thing all the time. So the group doesn't really work, and they have a place to practice what they're learning. The vast majority of people I work with in the speaker studio, modeled after the actor's studio and the sideways acting studio where I had all of my biggest learnings, it's small groups, so 9 people or less in the main studio sessions. And the reason that I love it, or a couple of the many reasons that I love it, is we were born those radiant, charismatic beings. And then we had to stand upright, so some muscles started doing some inefficient things. And the world gave us messages like, don't be too big, don't be too much, don't take up too much space, don't be too emotional. And we suppressed our voice, our breath, our energy, our life force out in the real world. So working in a small group is more effective for the vast majority of people, for your whole self, body, mind, heart, soul, inner critics, to open back up to that kind of vibrant, free-flowing energy and volume that we had when we were babies, and really believing, oh, when I show up in this soulful way, no one's going to explode or implode. My voice does matter because people in the room are reflecting back to me that I matter. And when you watch someone else in the group and part of you is still thinking, oh, that's true for everyone but me. And then you see someone else say that, who you know touched you. There's a learning and a transformation that becomes exponential because of the safe space of the group. And then the leap to go from that intimate size group to a video or 500 people in a room, it's like the body knows the difference between 9 people and 500, and it goes, I can do that. I know I can do that because I did it in a group, not just I did it in front of Lori, and now you want me to do what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you talked a little bit about how people might want to speak in different ways. So for some people, that would be podcasting, or it could be social media, or it could be speaking in front of large groups. So are these all people who are, because I'm imagining you're wanting to work with people who want to really share powerful messages. Do they come to you already knowing, here's how I want to share my message? Or is that something you help work with them on in terms of, this is a great platform for you to start with?
Yeah. Some people already know what their message is. Like, they might come to me and say, I have a whole talk. I want help with how I'm delivering it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the least common. Some people come in because they've got a format for a talk that was given to them and it feels a little cookie cutter, and they want to tweak it a little or tear the whole thing down and start over again and find their talk.
Yeah.
Many of my people come to me when they're feeling that call, but they don't fully know what it is yet. They know the essence of what it is. And through being in the speaker studio and working with me, we have to have something to say to work on every week. So it's like they're verbally processing their way with prompts like, speak for 2 minutes about anything you're passionate about. We build to sharing their story, an origin story or a healing story or a heroine's journey type story, which is a big one. We're about to have a showcase for that in a couple of weeks, 2 weeks from today as we're recording this. And I might give them video prompts for, you know, like capture our attention and then give us one learning that you wish we knew. So if it were you, I might say, give us one learning on branding or marketing, one nugget in your short 2-minute video, and practice it. And then you can record it while we're practicing it, or they can go off and record it another time. And then we build to people giving their transformation talk, kind of like a TED Talk. And I'm calling mine transformation talks because we really want the room to transform energetically from the experience of the talk. And the story is an ingredient in the talk. And all of that time of speaking for 60 seconds, 2 minutes, 5 minutes about things you're passionate about, through doing all of that, it's like the talk starts to reveal itself over the course of some time.
It's really beautiful.
Thank you.
Then do you also help people get booked, or do you work with people who can help them if they say, I want to work with you for this part, but then now I want more help getting the message out to the world?
Yeah, I'm not an expert in getting booked, and I want to stay in my soulful speaking lane and either refer out, and or I've started bringing guest experts in to do bonus sessions and speaker studio sessions during the summer that are on anything that is speaking related or speaking adjacent. So energy work, business coaches, possibly even branding and marketing, stylists, how to get booked as a speaker. All of those are on the list of, if I don't already have them booked to come into the studio, I would give someone the name. Here's the name of someone that I've met with or that I saw speak and really loved who does that. And that's their whole business.
I love that you know that that's a need, but you also are so firm in who you are and what your lane is.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. And it's, again, it's so easy for us to go after everything else that's out there that, oh, this would be a great add-on, or that would be. And it's really hard, I think, to stay as focused as you are. So I applaud you.
Thank you.
It's definitely aspirational for me. And it's something I've been working on, is really getting into that lane.
Thank you. Yeah, it took some work for me too. And really hearing people and listening more and more over time when they would be reflecting, what is my zone of genius? That's not my zone of genius. And instead of seeing the people who do that like competition, I'm going to meet with you. Like, let's get together after a networking event and see if we click.
Yeah.
And I'll send my people to you when they get to the point where they go, well, now that I've found my voice, I want to go use it more. Where can I go? I can give you a 2-minute answer, and she's got a book and a community and a business all built on that very question.
Fantastic. Well, let's turn back to your book. What inspired you to write it? Where in the process? Was it early days? Was it later on?
Yeah, it was very intuitive. I found myself having the thought, I think I need to write a book. I think I'm meant to write a book. And just like with the, you need to go get a master's degree and do something else with your life, I didn't listen at first. I was more rebellious this time, though. I think I remember there was like some swearing involved when I started to realize this was going to happen and I did not feel ready. And with my left brain, I didn't understand why. Because the real magic happens when you're in those small circles working with people. So I was like, why? You can't learn to speak from a book. And then I finally said yes to the intuition. It was 2014, actually, later in the year. So I'm almost at the 10th anniversary of it. And for anybody out there thinking of writing a book, just say yes when you're thinking of it. What got me to say yes was I knew a lot of my clients, even then, were introverts who were not going to just come get to know me in a workshop. Which, that's all I was doing at the time, was like day-long workshops in person for the most part. And I knew that there was, you know, a whole lot of people that I could help that were looking for me, wanted to get to know me with a cup of tea and a blanket, sitting by the fire reading a book. That's like their dream Saturday. So I was writing it for them. And I was writing it so that I could stop trying to cram too much into my workshops.
Okay.
And focus on the experience and have this little thing that you could carry in your purse or your iPhone. That was like everything I wish I could have said, but we didn't have time for in the 7-hour workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And through the course of writing it, I realized what the experience was like for my clients, many of whom to this day are still writers first and talkers second.
Oh.
It's like their soul speaks to them in the written word. So when they get up in front of a video camera or on a stage to speak their ideas, they feel like they're translating into another language. For a long time, that's how I felt when writing. In fact, I worked with a coach where I talked the first version of my book. And then I looked at her notes and transcriptions from what I said, and all the future drafts were edit, 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 add, edit, add, edit. In 2020, there would be moments, even as I wrote it in 2014, where it was like I was learning and my work was deepening and I had even more empathy and understanding for my clients. And then I put the book away from probably like 2016 to 2020. And in 20, just by accident, hadn't picked up my own book. And in 2020, when I was working with the branding person, I opened up the book because I felt like I had gotten lost a little. And it was time to come back home to what I was really here to do. And I'll tell you, some of the things that were in that book, I have moments every time I look at it again where I go, I wrote that? That's really great. It's true. It rings true. And I don't remember writing it. I had that back in 2012 to 2014 when I was writing it. I had it in 2020 when I looked at it. And every once in a while now, there's still a sentence where I go, I was really channeling and kind of discovering it as I was writing it.
I am so struck by some of the things that you said about how introverts, they want to get to know you through reading first. When I lived in Houston, I had a social club, and a lot of our members, it was really to help build community because Houston's a small town and a big city. And if you haven't met the right people, you don't know how to get involved in whatever you want to get involved in, business, philanthropy, getting invited out to the performances, whatever it is. And we found that a lot of our members were introverts and they signed up to take a chance, but then they wouldn't show up for anything. So I'm like, oh, that's so interesting. So it is true that you have to think about how are you going to communicate the message to the person who really needs and who's really going to relate to what you're saying and learn so much and flourish out of it.
Correct.
I'm going to remember that next time I try to start something like that. So what are some things that people must think about when they're thinking about being a visionary, being a leader, if they're an ambitious empath, loving rebel?
Getting clear on the vision, the change. What is that hunger that you have to contribute to the world? It's probably something that rubs you the wrong way in the world that you wish were different. And getting clear on the essence of it, not like the 17-step plan, but what is your vision? What is your dream to make your world or the world a better place? And then being able to navigate from actually being present with the world around us,
Lord,
moment by moment, to making that vision a reality.
Mm-hmm.
That's where my hunger for the life coaching, which I call leadership coaching, always was. It was like, I love that. And I still do tiny little bits of it, but I don't market to it. It's just, I work with somebody on speaking and they just come to me and I say, okay. Because it's vital. And it's having someone help you with listening to the intuition and weeding out what are the shoulds that are clouding your intuition and what is the vision that you're called to and what is the next step right in front of you. And then the last piece is communicating that vision in a way that it calls other people forth in to join you on the mission that you're on or to go off and start their own that's related because they've been inspired by something you said. So it's that soulful speaking piece.
Wonderful. What is the best way for people to learn more about you? And I think you also have a quiz. Is that correct?
I do. I have one quiz, and there may be two more coming soon. The quiz that I have now is called the Speaker Alter Ego Quiz. It's looking at what are the masks that we may think we need to be, that we might be grabbing every once in a while. Because as Jerry Seinfeld said many years ago, speaking scares us more than death. We'd rather be the person in the coffin than the one giving the eulogy. So every once in a while, speakers end up grabbing a protective mask that's like only showing the world a part of themselves. So it's a quiz to identify what's your top speaker alter ego mask so that once you know it, you can let it go and then unleash your soulful speaker and your own inner radiance. And best place to get a hold of me is on my website, voice-matters.com. And I am on LinkedIn, Instagram, and YouTube. I'm about to move away from Facebook. That'll probably be coming out as a business, not as a person. So right. You'll see me as a person there. Your favorite socials are at the bottom of the website.
Fantastic. And I always like to ask my guests if they have a favorite quote, mantra, verse, poem, or just one that's really resonating with you in this moment.
The one that popped into my head is Michelangelo. I saw the angel in the marble and I carved until I set him free. Years ago, I was talking to someone when I was teaching more theater, and the head of the department said, you should put that in your teaching statement, because big preview to, you know, that's just like 25 years later now. That's what I felt like my job was as a teacher. And that's absolutely what my job is as a soulful speaking coach. What is in the way of the innate presence of the person coming across as fully as it can? And for people listening, know that you are the angel in the marble. You're already perfectly, imperfectly, beautifully human. And it's not about changing you into something that you're not. There are no shoulds. It's about removing what isn't you so that the angel can shine through.
What a beautiful way to end this conversation. So, Laurie, thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you to everybody who is listening or watching this episode. And I will be back with another amazing expert to share their journey and a little bit more insight and inspiration for you. Want more? Check out AmplifyWithAnnika.com or follow me on socials at AmplifyWithAnnika.